Okay, so let's do a little bit of an overview of the second paragraph compared to the first paragraph. Look at that. Woohoo! On Shabbos, my friend who lent me Rabbi Lam's book happened to stop by to ask me a shaila. I'm like, I have the book for you. I have finished with the first paragraph. Okay, so as you have probably noticed in your life, I hope, the first and second paragraph of Shema have a lot of overlapping themes. They both have tefillin, they both have mezuzah, we know they're overlapping themes, and Torah, and, you know, etc. But Chazal, at least, conceptualized them completely differently. How do they view them? I mean, Chazal recognized that you might mess up. That's why there are all types of halachot. What if you're in the middle of ukshartem and realize you forget which paragraph you're in? Do you assume you're in the first, or do you assume you're in the second? They know that people get confused because there's overlap. We got it. So what do Chazal call the first paragraph of Shema? Kabbalat o Malchut Shemayim. The point is accepting the yoke of heaven. What about the second one? Kabbalat o Mitzvot. Remember, Chazal say, why do you say the first paragraph before the second paragraph? Because first you have to accept Mitzvot, first you accept God, and then you accept Mitzvot. So Chazal think that the first paragraph is Kabbalat o Malchut Shemayim. The second one is more about Mitzvot, which makes sense, meaning to the extent that the first and second overlap, it's the mitzvot in it, not the Shema, the Hafta. That's not there. It's the Torah should be in your mouth, tefillin, mezuzah. The mitzvot overlap, but it's more about Karva Onesh than it is about overarching themes of belief. So that makes a lot of sense. There is, though, a few other differences that are salient. The first paragraph, what is the dominant emotion or religious sensibility that it's playing on? Meaning, what drives you to do mitzvot in the first paragraph of Shema? It does talk about mitzvot, but what religious sensibility drives you to do mitzvot? What? Ava Hashem v'ahavta Hashem Elokecha. Kol vavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol modecha. What about in the second paragraph? So, or what we might call fear. Yirat, what the Rambam would call yirat, right? The Rambam would say the lower level of fear. Yirat ha'onesh. But clearly, it's framed about, if you listen to God, this will happen. If you don't listen to God, this will happen. So, even when they do have overlapping mitzvot, the sensibility behind them in the first paragraph is love of God, rather than fear and reward and punishment, which is what's going on in the second paragraph. So, they may overlap, but the themes are different. Third, very important difference is whether the address is to the individual, singular, vahavta, or plural, right? So, Ezra, what we said so far is that even though there are overlapping themes in the first and second paragraph of Shema, Chazal described the first paragraph as Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, and the second one is Kabbalat Ol Mitzvot, which makes sense because in the end of the day, they both have the mitzvot, but the overarching dogma appear in the first paragraph and not the second. Second point is that while they both have the same mitzvot, some of them, the first paragraph seems to be driven by the sensibility of Avad Hashem, while the second one is Yira, because it's focusing on reward and punishment. If you listen to God, this will happen. If not, not. And the third difference is that the first paragraph is written in singular, Vahavta, rather than plural, where the second paragraph is much more written in plural. Okay? Fine. So those are a few introductory notes about the second paragraph of Shema. One second. We just opened it up. Sorry. Missed the wrong sefer. There we go. Right, and that's how it starts off, right? V'haya im shamoa tishme'u, you, plural, shall listen. Okay. And in fact, it is this final difference that for the Sifrei is, for Chazal, and the Sifrei is fundamentally the difference between the first and second paragraph. This is the one they pick up on the most, and Rashi quotes it. right, that it is, Rashi says, b'chol levavchem v'chol nafshechem, v'alo kvar hizir b'chol levavchem v'chol nafshecha. Didn't you already say this? So what is the answer? El azhara liyochid azhara l'tzibur. Now, let me ask you a very simple question. In light of what we've just said, why would you think that the paragraph that is devoted to the community, rather than the one devoted to the individual, should be the one where mitzvot take a more primary role than dogma, where fear takes a more primary role than love? Meaning, if the main distinction is plural versus singular, according to Sifrei, how does that explain the other differences, right, the other emphases? So what do you think? Okay, good. So that's what Nechama Leibovich basically says. Nechama Leibovich says very nicely that these are related points, which is, look, telling someone that they should serve God out of love is very nice and very lofty. And there are individuals to whom that will speak. But when you're talking about a community following God, you need to shoot towards the lowest common denominator, right? Which might not be love. So this is how she writes it. Love of God is a matter for the individual who strives to attain it through self-perfection. While the acceptance of the yoke of mitzvot and their fulfillment is only... Sorry. Is it what she says? No. That's what I would have said. Sorry. I take it back. But that's what I would have said at some level, right? That, and she does sort of get at this as well. But there are other possibilities, okay? So here's... Yeah, I'm looking at my notes now. This is what I said, right? What Joseph said is what I said, right? Is that maybe the individual you can say if you love God, but that's something that individuals will reach, but not everyone will reach it. Nechama Leibovich quotes Heinemann, who sort of says this, but in a slightly different way, which I find a little bit odd, where he says as follows. Love, he thinks, the feeling of love is the same for all people. But fear, people are afraid of different things, and therefore motivating people for punishment will express itself differently, because some people are, you know, afraid of needles, as all the people were freaking out about the vaccine told me before, and some people are afraid of starvation, or afraid of disease, or whatever. I find this weird, because I don't know, people love in different ways also, right? I think it's more simple, which is what yesterday said, which is no, individuals, tzaddikim, you can expect love from them, but not everyone. As a community, you shoot for the lowest common denominator, and people can be motivated by... For sure, but as the Rambam says, first, right, the basic level, the first level is yirat ha'onesh, then love, then yirat ha'romamut, right? The Rambam is three levels. First is fear of punishment, then love, then awe, right? But the lowest level, which we assume that most people can reach, is fear of punishment. So if you're talking to the community, start with the basics, get people to keep the Torah for basic reasons, and then you can strive higher, but you're not talking to everybody when you talk about love, because not everyone will reach that. Nechama Leibovich has another idea, which I think is really nice. But it goes like this. She says as follows. Love of God is a matter for the individual who strives to attain it through self-perfection, while the acceptance of the yoke of mitzvot and their fulfillment is only conceivable in human society. What does that mean? Right? She says, look, the first paragraph, as Chazal conceptualize it, is about dogma, beliefs, emotions, religious sensibilities. That's a personal affair. You love God, you fear God, you believe in God, etc. But mitzvot in Judaism aren't personal issues, aren't just personal, because so many mitzvot depend on community. And therefore, Kabbalat al mitzvot doesn't make sense without the context of community. Because what are you going to say? Certain mitzvot, fine, you can do without a community, but like tzedakah, Bikur Cholim, any chesed, right? All Trumot, Maestrot, all those assumed community, right? A court system, mitzvot as a whole, as a way of life, that takes place in the community. And therefore, when you're talking about something which is fundamentally about dogma, you can talk to the individual. But when you're talking about something which is fundamentally about practice, practice takes place in society. So she writes, Crusoe, living on a desert island, isolated from human society, could indeed have implemented the exhortation of thou shalt love the Lord thy God, but could not have fulfilled the if you shall diligently hearken to my commandments, which for the most part relate to the life of man amid society, his bonds with his family, friends, the state, and the human race. Right, so difference two, so we have sort of three differences. One is, only individuals will reach love, but you can hope that everyone will reach fear of punishment. Two, which I don't really get, which is that love is the same for everyone, but fear expresses itself differently. Don't love that. Nechama's, which I like a lot, is that belief and dogma is a personal affair, whereas mitzvot in their totality can only be expressed in society and therefore have to be addressed to community. Third possibility from the Ramban. Is as follows. Is the following. You know, the Rambam, right? Ginsburg has done the Rambam on Hashgacha with you? That, probably, right? That individuals, only big tzaddikim, Hashgacha relates to them, but as a nation, Hashgacha relates to the nation. Right? So the Ramban says something similar here. He says, look, da, ki anisim lo yasu l'tova lo ra'a rak l'tzadikim gmurim l'shem gmurim. Hashkacha pratis, God only implements for the perfectly righteous or the extremely evil. Aval ha-beinonim k'derech menogo shalom yaseh b'em tova ra'a k'derech uka'al l'lotam. The average person isn't directly under the auspices of Hashkacha all the time. But who is? The nation. Right? The nation is. So if you believe that the individual mostly lives according to Minhag Shel Olam and not direct Hashgacha, but the nation lives on direct Hashgacha even when they're not all tzaddikim, so reward and punishment only makes sense when you talk in the community. And that's what he says in the first part. Valok par his ki v'chol v'alcha v'chol nafshcha, etc. Ele azhara l'yachal azhara l'tzibor. Ubeir anyan ki Hashem lo yasen yisim tamid. God doesn't do miracles all the time. Latei matara aret v'chol eit yorei malkosh to add rain whenever it's supposed to. Lo hosif v'dagam v'dirosh v'yitzhar l'arbot gam eisa v'sadeh l'bayimah. Oshi yator shemayim v'yev oshu. Rak al maaseh rov ha'am. God only controls the world through Hashgacha all the time for the world, for the nation. But the individual, even when he has Hashgacha, it's not rain. It's his good life. But national goodness comes at the schod of the nation. He doesn't call him mitzvot. Right, so he says, both in a Maimonidean sense, that most individuals are not run by Hashgacha all the time, but the community is. And two, the type of Hashgacha described here is national Hashgacha. That only makes sense for the nation. Right, the community always functions under Hashgacha, and that's why it makes sense to say, if the community is righteous, you'll get rain, and if not, not. But for the individual, which is Vahavta, you don't talk about reward and punishment because, right? National Hashgacha reign. That's not going to happen for the individual. That does happen for the community. So that's difference three. The Maharal and the Gurarye said something fascinating. And he says as follows. There's another reason. People have this tendency that when there's a personal mitzvah, they know that they're responsible. But when a mitzvah is aimed at the community, they feel like they're not responsible because they think they can punt it to somebody else. So in the context of talking to the nation, God has to reiterate that you're chayev in mitzvot, to remind you that even though I'm talking to the nation, each and every one of you must individually accept mitzvot, which is not always something which is obvious. Okay? So all of these physicians think that in the end of the day, the real controlling difference between the first paragraph and the second paragraph is the singular versus the plural. And again, the difference that we've seen either Heinemann's sort of odd that love is different for everybody, but love is the same for everybody, fear is different. Mine, which is, look, you can expect most people to reach a basic level of fear, but not necessarily love. Nechama Leibovich, who says that dogma, love of God, can happen in the individual, but the full performance of mitzvah must happen in community. The Ramban, who says that, look, reward and punishment on the national scale only makes sense at national hashkacha, not individual. Or the Gur Aryeh, who says you need to reiterate Kabbalat mitzvot in a community to remind people they can't just punt and let someone else do it, which they know by individual mitzvot, they don't necessarily know when they're talking on the communal level. Okay. So that's some overarching ideas, the difference between the first and second paragraph. I think we're going to leave the rain things for next week and do that in detail, right? It's worth doing. You've probably done it with me at some point, Yosef, right? Because it's about to rain. Yeah, I see that. Okay, let's try to at least get a few other differences that I think are important here. So, I think that the Rishonim pick up a lot of specific differences, but I think that they integrate into some of the broader themes that we said. So I at least want to get these out there today, and if we stop then, because Yosef is dying here, then we'll stop. It's fine. So one, both of them talk about Torah and teaching Torah to the next generation. But one striking difference verbally is that in the second paragraph, you get a word that does not appear at all in the first paragraph, which is v'samtem et divrei Eilel v'alchem, the putting, right? Right. This. So why that? Meaning they're both about Talmud Torah. So why, what does that add? So Rashi says that this teaches you, af l'achar shen tiglu ayum etzion b'mitzvot. It's teaching you that even after you leave Israel, you're chayev in mitzvot. Now, for the Ramban says, why do you have to tell you that? Because the Ramban thinks, famously, that outside of Eretz Yisrael, mitzvot actually apply less. It's just practice, right? The mitzvot only apply in their full form in Israel, and outside of Israel, just practice, right? This is a very shocking position of the Ramban. Right, and that's what he said. How did he get this? Because he's saying it's right after the pasuk says you'll go into galut, you'll be lost from the land and still do the mitzvot. He says, but still, the main mitzvot are in the land. You could take it less extreme, which is why will you have a havamina that you don't keep the mitzvot outside of Israel? Very good. So Schwab just says, look, outside of Israel, you can't keep all the mitzvot. You might have thought that mitzvot are an all-or-nothing deal. The chiddush is that it's not an all-or-nothing deal, and even though when you're not in Eretz Yisrael, you can't keep all the mitzvot you can keep, you still have to keep. Now, I think that this makes a lot of sense in that this aspect of it, the v'samtam, as Rashi understands it, makes sense in the national paragraph rather than the singular one, because galut is not an individual experience. And definitely the loss of the completion of mitzvah, the totality of the system, is not something felt by an individual, as Nechama points out. But when you're talking to a community who, when they're in Israel, can have a total system, they will feel the incompleteness when they're not in Eretz Israel, and therefore all of a havamina that it's all or nothing. If religion were just individual, that wouldn't be the same. But when you talk at the national level and so many of the mitzvot are gone, we're not Eretz Israel, that's when you feel that it's all or nothing, and that's where the Torah has to remind you in that context, keep all the mitzvot, even when you're not in Eretz Yisrael. So I think that that's, right, this, especially as Rav Schwab takes it, this sometimes makes sense that it's only in the national paragraph, following Galut, which is a national tragedy, rather than the individual one. Another small difference. Me'od. Is that you don't get the me'odecha here. That you get u'la'avdo b'chol avavchem u'b'chol nafshechem and al-avavchem v'al-nafshechem, but you never have v'chol me'odecha equivalent. Right? So why not? Why not? So the Or HaChaim has the... Oh, does it not happen here? Okay, that's fine. Says, very simply, Chazal say, what does me'odecha tell you? That if you like your money more than your life, then you should give up your money to God and not just your life. So the Or HaChaim says, look, when you're talking to individuals, there will definitely be an individual here or there for whom that is true, that they value their money over their life. But when you're talking to the nation, you're talking generalities. And most people value their life over their money. And therefore, there's no need to say that when you're talking to the community, and there you suffice with the normal psychological reality, which is most people prefer life over money. When you're talking to the individual, you have to cover every circumstance because different people are different. But the community, we can talk in generalities. That's the Or HaChaim. This doesn't work as well with the... with the other daya, right? What's the other daya? That ma'od is b'chol mida umida shemodid l'cha, that whatever God gives you, you have to thank God. So it doesn't work as well, but I would suggest that there is a way of explaining why that wouldn't appear in the communal paragraph, and that is, this paragraph has a very neat Schar V'Onesh imagination of the world. Right? Meaning, what is the theology of love God no matter what he gives you? That sometimes you might be righteous and bad things will happen to you. And sometimes you might be evil and good things will happen to you. And that's why God has to say, even if bad things happen to you and you're righteous, love God. But what's the theology of the second paragraph? That when we're talking to a community, that doesn't really happen. Good things happen when you're good, bad things happen when you're bad. If that's the case, then it's less necessary to say, v'chol me'odecha, that love God, no matter, v'chol mido mida shemodei. It's right after he said, if you do good things will happen. If you do bad things will happen. So why would you then say, oh, and if bad things happen to good people, you should still love God? That goes against the theology, the communal theology presented in the second paragraph. Right? So I think it does make sense to say that, v'chol me'odecha, this idea that you should love God even if he does bad things to you when you don't deserve it, that belongs in the first paragraph because we recognize that Tzadik V'Ra'lo, it belongs less in the communal paragraph where God is promising to treat you according to what you actually deserve. A third difference is that both of them talk about Talmud Torah. Both of them talking about Torah to your children. But there's one big difference between the second and third paragraph, which is... first and second, rather, is that in the first paragraph, you teach your children Torah, end of story. In the second paragraph, which is talking to the community, the Torah adds something important, which is, V'limadtem otam et v'neichem edaber bam b'shivtecha b'veitecha v'echecha v'adecha v'shachu v'chavkumecha v'chtavtam al-mazot b'veitecha v'shorecha. Lima'an yirbu yimeichem v'imei v'neichem ala adam asher nishba'adun ala v'deichem l'teit lehem k'mei ha'shamayim al-aretz. So that your children will be zocha to live in Eretz Yisrael. You don't get that in the first paragraph. Obviously not. Because the first paragraph is, again, individuals. But to say that the communal teaching of Talmud Torah will lead to the next generation being able to live in Israel, that's a communal dimension of Talmud Torah that doesn't exist in the first. So I think that if you're careful... I think Chazal were being very, very precise when they identified the key difference between the first and second paragraph as being Tzibur and Yachid. Everything else is a derivative of that. The fact that the first one talks about dogma and the second one about practice, and the first one doesn't talk about reward and punishment, the second one does, those aren't the ikkar. Those are the results of the fact that it's talking to the community, right? And therefore, I think Chazal are very right, that if you follow it, you'll see that the main difference is whether you're talking to community or individual. Everything else, the emphasis on mitzvot and the emphasis on theology and reward and punishment and national things and galus and all of that, that's all a derivative of the fact that the second paragraph is this through the communal lens. And that explains, in the end of the day, I think basically all the differences. Right? Now, obviously, these are different prakim in the Torah. You don't really need to explain it. But in that sense, right, that seems to be the most salient difference, of which everything else is derivative. One more possibility, and then Yosef is really fading on me, so I'll let him go, is the following. The Rambam, in the last Perush Mishnah in Makot, what does he say? Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratza HaGadosh Baruch Hu Lezakot Eitz Yisrael Lefichach Hirba Lehem Torah Umitvot Shneamar Adonai Chafetz Leman Tzidko Yagdil Torah V'Yadir. I'm sure you've heard that before. Yes? That basically at the end of any rabbi's drasha when they want to say Kaddish, it's like Pavlovian, right? No one knows what they're saying, right? Yagdil Torah V'Yadir Yitzgadal V'Yitzgadash Merava. Right? What? What? Yeah, that is. But that the whole Mishnah, Rechanan ben Akash Omer. Oh, the whole part is the last Mishnah in Makot, right? That people, it's one of the Mishnah that people say at the end of a shir, because since you're only going to say Kaddish after Tersha Bal Peh, so in case they were talking too much about the Parsha, but they want to say Kaddish, they make sure they say Mishnah at the end. What is the Rambam says, what is the theology of that Mishnah? So the Rambam says, look, not everybody is Mesugal to be the perfect philosopher, right? Which is what the Rambam in most places thinks is necessary to get Olam Haba. But the Rambam says everybody in life is capable of, when there are a lot of mitzvot, finding one that they do perfectly, right? Which will be enough for them to get at least some base level of Olam Haba. And therefore, the Mishnah says, Rabbi Chanan HaMikash Omer, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Zakot Yisrael. God wanted to give people a chance to have schut. So what did he do? L'fichach hirba lahem Torah u'mitzvot. So he gave them a lot of mitzvot, meaning a lot of chances. She'emar Hashem chafetz l'man tzidko. God wanted their tzedakah, right? Yagdil Torah v'yadir. So he made a lot of Torah. With that theology in mind, I think that there's another way of explaining the difference between the first and second paragraph. According to the Rambam, not everyone is misugal to really get to the point where their perfection comes purely on the level of theology, of Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shamayim, Yichud Hashem, and all of that. Right? They're supposed to have a minimal level of that, but that's not the realm of most people. For the Rambam, the average person, the way that he zochet to Olam Haba, is by performing mitzvot properly. Finding the mitzvah that he does properly. And therefore, it could be that in the communal paragraph, the emphasis is mitzvot. Because the average person, action is easier than perfection of theology. But when you're talking to the individuals, so then you can focus on perfection of theology, because that's obviously an ideal, even if not everyone will reach it. So I think that's another way of thinking about it. Okay, I'll let Yosef go. Feel better. I know that the vaccine does give some... I'll chalk it up to that, even though I know it's just you didn't sleep. But I'll chalk it up to the side effects of the vaccine, which are not major, but after the second one, apparently they're worse. What? Yes, exactly. The second one apparently really is worse. A lot of people I know have been getting, like, have really been knocked out and had fever and whatever for a day, but then, and then it goes away. It's the same thing, it's just that your body, that's when you're really giving your body the, you know, yeah.